Well, hello, folks. Let's talk at it again. This week, we're talking about non-traditional students with one of my favorite people, Eric Painter, himself a non-traditional student in his second iteration after he served in the military for a number of years. After he was a contractor, a business owner, he decided to change trajectories and directions. In the first segment, we talked about scheduling and the impact of scheduling classes and labs. And how it can affect positively or not so positively non-traditional students. This segment is going to be focused on clubs and cohorts that hopefully support those non-traditional students. Boys, take us from here. What do you think? What are your thoughts on clubs? What are your thoughts on building cohorts?
Well, I guess I'll go since Chris didn't jump in right away. Just yell at
he's
me.
Shy. He's shy. He's shy.
You got something.
Right, yes.
I don't believe that even a little bit. I think clubs are important for all students. It doesn't matter, non-traditional, traditional. I think they provide the same things for all of these students. They provide a framework with additional other students that are in the same thing they are. They create a community. They provide networking, right? Especially for traditional students, the networking. These are the people that are starting their jobs. They're going to be going through their careers at the same pace more or less that you are. You never know when you need somebody to let you know there's a job opening or give you a resume or whatever it may be. You know, those networking is super important for everybody, traditional and non-traditional. I think a lot of non-traditional students, though, have maybe some challenges that the traditional students don't, whether it be scheduling, whether it be commitments, whether it be past experiences, that can have negative effects on dealing with going back to school. And that additional community and support really helps kind of keep you connected and grounded. It keeps you motivated so you go back because you're seeing people that you're spending time with outside of just a classroom. A classroom, oftentimes, you don't necessarily know your other students, depending on the class. I teach mostly labs, so it's a little bit easier. But a lecture classroom, you may not know the person you sit next to the entire time. And so that connection isn't going to bring you to class. But if you're in a club that is kind of that same group of people, then you're going to start to build those connections that are going to make going to school every day a lot easier. It's not going to be you get up and your anxiety or whatever your other issues are just like, yeah, and it's not happening today, right? And for me, that was the Veterans Club when I went back to school. They gave me that, and I see that within the Veterans Club. It also amplifies your voice, right? That club is there of people, like-minded people. So even if you're a non-traditional student, the people within that club are going to hopefully be people that have similar thoughts as you. And maybe you don't feel like you by yourself on the campus have a voice, but that club does have a voice. And so that lets you feel a little bit more heard, more relevant within the overall community, I guess, if that makes sense.
It does. Yeah, and Chris?
It does. Yeah. And one of the things, anytime I get a chance to talk to traditional age students, which I get to do that more often than non-traditional students, I always encourage them the importance of getting involved in college. And, you know, for all of the reasons that Eric just talked about, and also, you know, you're joining a community, you're growing your network and all of that. And I understand that there can be a little bit of anxiety if you're a non-traditional student. Going back to college anyway brings a certain level of anxiety. Am I going to fit in and all of that? And when I look at a lot of our clubs and organizations, they're geared heavily toward that traditional age student. Now, I have seen non-traditional students join some of these clubs. I've seen some non-traditional students ascend to leadership roles in some of these clubs. But I can also see where some may have an uphill battle to find that community that's for them. And I think one of the things that colleges, two-year colleges especially, need to be thinking about, you know, is number one, what kind of student life are we providing in general? And two-year colleges are notorious for not doing an exceptional level job of that like four-year colleges do often. But also, how are we making sure that our clubs and organizations are diverse enough and we're not only focusing on those 18, 19, and 20-year-olds, but we're also giving opportunities for somebody that is coming back to school after starting a family, after a military career, changing careers, or whatever circumstances exist to bring them back to college.
I'm going to take us into a little bit of a more specific dive. We have seen over the years an enhancement in the recruitment of certain ethnic, racial, and ethnic and racial groups, but we still see male African Americans as individuals who are not recruited to the same level or are not participating, and they're not sticking with college the longest. We see something similar with male Hispanics, despite the fact that Hispanics have now matched, not at least in the statistics I've read, the non-Hispanic whites in terms of participating in higher education. But so what can we do for those people? What can we do for the people whose gender identity or disability tends to be potential issues? Because, you know, Eric, you brought up the question of the VA and how it helped you, the VA club at the college, the Veterans Club at the college. But was that all that you needed? Is that siblinghood of like-minded individuals? What do you folks think?
Well, I would say the military is a special case in this case, because you are very much siblings, like you mentioned, right? It doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter what color you were, what religion you are, you're all green, right? You've been through stuff that other people are never going to go through. And that's not to say that other groups don't have that same kind of bond. But I'm more likely to call a veteran friend of mine than I am somebody I went to high school with, even though that person in high school, maybe I was in school with them from, you know, 5 years through college, and the Army people I was with for 3 or 4 years, right? That connection's really tight. But I think what you have to think about is there's two basic types of, well, I'll say three types of clubs. One is a club that's based on the profession, right? Say ag ambassadors, for instance, right? For ag students. You have clubs that are built on support, such as the Veterans Club. And then you have clubs that are built on interests, let's say an anime club, a gaming club, a rocketry club, whatever it may be. So you've got a multiple type of clubs. And I think maybe what we need for some of these groups that you're bringing in that we're not reaching are more of these cultural interest types of clubs, various types of, say, music clubs or something like that, where we can bring people in. And that way they have something more than just an English class or a math class that's bringing them in, right? Because they're looking maybe for more of that community that they're not getting at school. And so maybe organizations that deal with more of kind of that cultural type of club, interest club, would pull more people in. I'm not really sure. Hartnell is overwhelmingly Hispanic. So our culture is pretty monolithic, realistically, for what we have. Which is good if you're a Hispanic student, but we don't see much else of anybody really, because not because they're not welcome. It's just our local community doesn't have a lot of other minorities. But I'm not really sure, to be honest. Sahi, what? I guess if I knew, I could make a lot of money, huh?
Maybe you could. Chris, how are you seeing it? Because I've got a few thoughts. I wanted to bounce off of you too.
Yeah, so, you know, I like the idea of, you know, doing something that creates these cohorts that students can be a part of, find like-minded individuals and all that. It's tough. Certainly, you also need to make sure that the funding is there to support all of these clubs and organizations. I think we've all seen instances where something has spun up and spun down just as fast because they don't have the ability to fundraise, or they don't have maybe a faculty partnership that is putting in their all in something like that. So, you know, finding those is tough. But I think having that other system support that is there is incredibly important for our non-traditional students. You know, I think about when Eric talks about being predominantly Hispanic at his college, where I am and where we've been, Sahi, you know, we've seen the population in the area over 90% white. Yet we are bringing in student athletes of various ethnicities and language backgrounds and all of that. And what are the things that are being done to make sure that those students are supported and can find each other maybe beyond their athletic team?
Yeah. Yeah. And so from my own experience, I found cohorts to be exceedingly game changers compared with the status quo. You know, whether it was in an area where, as in a discipline, where completion in four-year institutions is in the 40 percentile, we bring it up to 90 percentile because we drive the students to be a homogenous group despite their different backgrounds. And I'm thinking about a couple of programs we ran that Eric's familiar with, like a computer science in 3 years, that had the completion rate from the go, from the first time we did it, of over 90% in 3 years, a bachelor's degree, compared with a national average of about 40 some odd percent after 6 years. But also I can see how, the programs that are run for individuals who are, underemployed or individuals who were recently released from prisons, how we can change things around and provide an infrastructure for them. So what do you think about those? Because, yes, there's a need for money, but sometimes it's elbow grease that's more needed than the dineros to drive the engine.
I just had a thought. We for those to let you see behind the scenes, we have a meeting ahead of time to discuss what we're going to discuss. And this isn't something I discussed then because I just thought of it. One of the things I like about cohorts, especially when you're dealing with, say, veterans or people who are getting out of prison, is that that cohort helps provide an extra bit of structure, right? You know where you're going to be every day, and you know if you're not there, you're going to be missed. You're not just a faceless crowd, right? It's the same people. And that structure really, I think, is very beneficial for groups of people that are coming out of someplace where they've had that structure and that maybe feel a little bit adrift without that day-to-day structure anymore. And I know those are very specific to military and to prisons, which is an odd interest, but I find that those two groups of people probably have more in common with each other than they do with the general population, with kind of the issues they have. But that's not just for them. I think that structure benefits a lot of different groups and a lot of individuals, that knowing that the same people are going to be there, they're going to see the same people. If they don't show up, we're going to know that Joe isn't in seat C. You know, right. He's going to be missed.
So if you've got an anxiety disability and having the same people that you've built a bond with, right? It doesn't matter whether you gained your anxiety because you're at the, in war or because you're born with severe anxiety. It's the same infrastructure. So why don't we learn from areas of success? Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly. It's a great way to bring people together. And I think, it's also really important to have that additional set of leadership from a faculty member, from a staff member that can oversee and help guide these different clubs and organizations, especially when we're building these cohorts, so that, they don't get lost. I look at our own CTE classes and see how tight those students are. I think mm-hmm. about nursing, for example, and mm-hmm. that's made up largely of non-traditional students, and they do everything together.
They walk down the hallways as flocks. It's amazing.
Yes, all the time. So, having that network of support that is also there to help say, hey, where were you yesterday? Or is everything okay? Or whatever it is super, super important.
No doubt about that. Well, folks, this was our second segment talking about non-traditional students, how we can support them, not just recruit them, but make sure that they're feeling welcome, that they're feeling that they're growing at the institution and can potentially complete to change their own life trajectories and those of their families. This week we have Eric Painter, a friend, not just of the show, but a personal friend, somebody who has written his own future, rewritten his own future because he committed to higher education, and now he's writing the future of many others. And as always, I've got my partner in crime, Chris. Folks, thanks again. You can find Let's Talk Ed wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget, like and share. Write to us, please. We want to hear your opinions. And you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. But don't forget, smash that bell so you can know whenever we post something new. Thank you, and we look forward to seeing you next time.